Blog Talk Radio. Podcast land. Welcome, welcome. We welcome you and thank you for tuning in. This is a Hot to Hot production and it's the Messenger edition. We have co-producers Ken and Ryan Hodge. This is Nurse Carmen. And next we'll be having a conversation with the Messenger, Ron Hodge.
Good evening and once again welcome to another half an hour of conversations or something that would hopefully stir within you the spirit to let you know what is being said is something that is truly good for the soul. What I want to do now, I want to just finish part two of our conversation that we were having regarding relationships. And I say, let all those who have ears to hear listen. For I tell you this, at the critical juncture in all human relationships, there is only one question. And that question is, what would love do now? I'm going to repeat that. There is only one question, and that is, what would love do now? No other question is relevant. No other question is meaningful. No other question has any importance to your soul. Now, we come upon a very delicate point of interpretation, for this principle of love sponsors action has been widely misunderstood. And it is this misunderstanding which has led the resentment and anger of life, which in turn have caused so many to stray from the path. For centuries, you have been taught that love-sponsored action arises out of the choice to be, to do, and have whatever produces the highest good for another. Yet, I tell you this, the highest choice is that which produces the highest good of you. As with all profound spiritual truths, this statement opens itself to immediate misinterpretation. The mystery clears a bit the moment one decides what is the highest good one could do for oneself. And when the absolute highest choice is made, the mystery dissolves. The circle completes itself, and the highest good for you becomes the highest good for another. It may take lifetimes to understand this, even more lifetimes to implement, for this truth revolves around an even greater one. What you do for yourselves, you do for another. What you do for another, you do for yourself. This is because you and the other are one. And this is because this is not but you. all real masters have walked the planet, have taught this. Verily, verily, I say unto you, inasmuch as you have done unto one of the least of these, my brethren, ye have done unto me. As you know, these were words quoted, they say, by Jesus. Yet this has remained for most people merely a grand esoteric truth with little practical application. In fact, it is the most practically applicable exoteric truth of all times. It is important in relationships to remember this, for without it, relationships will be very difficult. Now, let's go back to the practical application of this wisdom and step away from the purely spiritual esoteric aspect of it now. So often, under the old understanding, people, well-meaning and well-intentioned, and many very religious, did what they thought would be best for the other person in their relationship. Sadly, all this produced in many cases, most cases, was continued abuse by the other, continued mistreatment, continued dysfunction in the relationship. Ultimately, the person trying to do what is right by the other, to be quick to forgive, to show compassion, to continually look past certain problems and behavior, becomes resentful, angry, and mistrusting, even of God. For how can a just God demand such unending suffering, joylessness, sacrifice, even in the name of love? The answer is, God does not. God asks only that you include yourself among those you love. God goes further. God suggests, recommend, that you put yourself first. I know this. I do this knowing full well that some of you will call this crazy, and therefore not what God would say, and that others will do what might be even worse, accept it as God's words and misinterpret it or distort it to suit their own purpose, to justify ungodly acts. I tell you this, putting yourself first in the highest sense never leads to an ungodly act. If therefore you have caught yourself in an ungodly act as a result of doing what is best for you, the confusion is not in having put yourself first, but rather in misunderstanding what is best for you. Now, of course, determining what is best for you will require you to also determine what is you are trying to do. This is an important step that many people ignore. What are you up to? What is your purpose in life? Without answers to these questions, the matter of what is best in any given circumstance will remain a mystery. As a particular matter, again, leaving esoteric aside, if you look to what is best for you in these situations where you are being abused, at the very least what you will do is stop the abuse. And that will be good for both you and your abuser, for even an abuser is abused when his abuse is allowed to continue. This is not healing to the abuser, but damaging. For if the abuser finds that his abuse is acceptable, what has he learned? Yet, if the abuser finds that his abuse will be accepted no more, what has been allowed to discover? What has that abuser been allowed to discover? Therefore, treating others with love does not necessarily mean allowing others to do as they wish. Parents learn this early with children. Adults are not so quick to learn it with other adults or nations against nations. Yet, despots cannot be allowed to flourish. but must be stopped in their disposition. Love or love of self and love of the despot demands it. This is the answer to your question. If love is all there is, how can man ever justify war? Sometime man must go to war to make the grandest statement about who man truly is, he who abhors war. There are times when you may have to give up who you are in order to be who you are. There are teachers who have taught you cannot have it all until you are willing to give it all up. Thus, in order to have yourself as a man of peace, you may have to give up the idea of yourself as a man who never goes to war. History has called upon men for such decisions. The same is true in the most individual and the most personal relationships. Life may more than once call upon you to prove who you are by demonstrating an aspect of who you are not. This is not so difficult to understand if you have lived a few years. Thought for the idealistic young, it may seem the ultimate contradiction. In more mature retrospect, it seems more divine dichotomy. This does not mean in human relationships that if you are being hurt, you have to hurt back, nor does it mean so in relationships between countries. It simply means that to allow another to continue to inflict damage may not be the most loving thing to do for yourself or the other. This should put to rest some pacifist theory that highest love requires no forceful response to what you consider evil. The discussion here turns exoteric once more, because no serious exploration of this statement can ignore the word evil and the value judgment it invites. In truth, there is nothing evil, only objective phenomena and experience. Yet your very purpose in life requires you to select from the growing collection of endless phenomena a scattered few which you call evil. For unless you do, you cannot call yourself nor anything else good, and thus cannot know or create yourself. By which you call evil do you define yourself, and by that which you call good? The biggest evil would therefore be to declare nothing evil at all. You exist in this life in the world of the relative, where one thing can only exist only insofar as it relates to another. This is at one and the same time both the function and the purpose of relationships, to provide a field of experience within which you find yourself, define yourself, and if you choose, constantly recreate who you are. Choosing to be godlike does not mean you choose to be a martyr, and it certainly does not mean you choose to be a victim. On your way to discovering who you are, when all possibilities of hurt, damage, and loss eliminated, it would be well to recognize hurt, damage, and loss as part of your experience and decide who you are in relation to it. Yes, the things that others think, say, or do sometimes hurt you until they do not anymore. What will get you from here to there most quickly is total honesty, being willing to assess, acknowledge, and declare exactly how you feel about a thing. Say your truth kindly, but fully and completely. Live your truth gently, but totally and consistently. Change your truth easily and quickly when your experience brings you new clarity. No one in right mind, least of all God, would tell you when you are hurt in a relationship to stand aside from it, because it to mean nothing. If you are now hurting, it is too late to cause it to mean nothing. Your task now is to decide what it does mean and to demonstrate that. For in so long, you choose and become who you seek to be. Then the question is asked, then pray, God, tell me, what promise should I make in relationships? What agreements must I keep? What obligations do relationships carry? What guidelines should I seek? The answer is the answer you cannot hear, for it leaves you without guidelines and renders null and void every agreement in the moment you make it. The answer is you have no obligation, neither in relationship nor in all of life. No obligation, no obligation, nor any restrictions or limitations, nor any guidelines or rules, nor are you bound by any circumstance or situation, nor constrained by any code or law, nor are you punished for any offense, nor capable of, for there is no such thing as being offensive in the eyes of God. Now, I've heard this before, this there's no rule kind of religion, this spirituality, anarchy. I just don't see how that works. And then I say there is no way it cannot work. If you are about the business of creating yourself, if on the other hand you imagine yourself to be about the task of trying to be what someone else wants you to be, the absence of rules or guidelines might indeed make things difficult. Yet, the thinking mind begs to ask, if God has a way she wants me to be, why didn't she simply create me that way to begin with? Why all the struggles for me to overcome? Who am I in order for me to become what God wants me to be? Mm-hmm. This the probing mind demands to know, and rightfully so, for it is a proper inquiry. The religious will have you believe that God created you as less than who God was so that you could have the chances to become who God is. Working against all odds, and I might add against every natural tendency that God has supposedly have given you. Among these so-called natural tendencies is the tendency to sin. You are taught that you were born in sin, that you will die in sin, and that to sin is your nature. One of your religions even teaches that you can do nothing about this. Your own actions are irrelevant and meaningless. It is arrogant to think that by some action of yours, you can't get to heaven. There is only one way to heaven, salvation. And that is through no undertaking of your own, but through the grace granted by God through acceptance of his Son as your intermediary. Once this is done, you are saved until it's done. Nothing that you do, not the life you live, not the choices you make, not anything you undertake of your own will in an effort to improve yourself or render you worthy, has any effect. Bear any influence. You are incapable of rendering yourself worthy because you are inherently unworthy. You were created that way. Why? God only knows. Perhaps he made a mistake. Perhaps he didn't get it right. Maybe he wished he could have done it all over again. But there it is. What to do? God made, I'm sorry, God made inherently imperfect beings, then had demands on them to be perfect or face damnation. So if you are saying that somewhere several thousand years into this world experience, God relented, saying that from then on, you didn't necessarily have to be good. You simply had to feel bad when you were not being good and accept as your savior the one being who could always be perfect, thus satisfying your hunger, God's hunger for perfection. You are saying that God's son, who you call the one perfect one, has saved you from your own imperfection, the imperfection that God gave you. In other words, God's son has saved you from what his father did. This is how many of us say it's set up. Now, I just ask real quick, isn't that kind of like mocking God? You have chosen the word attack. I am simply engaging the issue. And the issue, by the way, is not fundamentalist Christianity, as you put it. It is the entire nature of God and of God's relationship to man. The question comes up here because we are discussing the matter of obligations in relationships and in life itself. You cannot believe in an obligationless relationship because you cannot accept who and what you really are. You call a life of complete freedom spiritual anarchy. God calls it God's great promise. It is only within the context of this promise that God's great plan can be completed. You have no obligation in relationship. You have only opportunity. Opportunity, not obligation, is the cornerstone of religion, the basis of all spirituality. So long as you see it the other way around, you will have missed the point. Relationship, your relationship to all things, was created as your perfect tool in the work of the soul. This is why all human relationships are sacred ground. It is why every personal relationship is holy. And this, many churches have it right. Marriage is a sacrament, but not because of its sacred obligation, rather because of its unequal opportunity. Never do anything in relationships out of a sense of obligation. Do whatever you do out of a sense of the glorious opportunity your relationships afford you to decide and to be who you really are. I gotta repeat that again because this is important. Never do anything in relationships out of a sense of obligation. Do whatever you do out of a sense of the glorious opportunity your relationships afford you to decide and to be who you really are. One guy said, yet over and over in my relationships, I've given up when the going gets tough. The result is that I've had a string of relationships where I thought as a kid that I'd have only one. I don't seem to know what it is like to hold on to relationships. Do you think I'll ever learn? What do I have to do to make it happen is what he says. It may sound as if holding on to a relationship means it's been a success. Try not to confuse longevity with a job well done. Remember, your job on the planet is not to see how long you can stay in relationship. It is to decide and experience who you really are. This is a point that we keep missing in all of our daily activities, is we keep forgetting who it is that we really are or who it is that we really want to be. This is not an argument for a short-term relationship, yet neither is there a requirement for long-term ones. Still, while there is no such requirement, this much should be said. Long-term relationships do hold remarkable opportunities for mutual growth, mutual expression, and mutual fulfillment. And that has its own reward. Now, first, make sure you get into a relationship for the right reason. I'm using the word right here as a relative term. I mean right relative to the larger purpose you hold in your life. As I've indicated before, most people still enter relationships for the wrong reasons. To end loneliness, fill a gap, bring themselves love, or someone to love. And those are some of the better reasons. Others do so to salvage the ego, end their depression, improve their sex life, recover from a previous relationship, or believe it or not, to relieve boredom. None of these reasons work. And unless something dramatic changes along the way, neither will the relationship. Now, I would challenge that most of us know why we entered into relationships, but I don't think you think about it in this way. I don't think you enter your relationships purposely. I think you enter your relationships because you fell in love. And I don't think you stop to look at why you fell in love, which has to which you were responding, what needs or sets of needs were being fulfilled. For most people, love is a response to need fulfillment. Everyone has needs. You need this, another needs that. You both see each other, a chance to need fulfillment. So you agree tactfully to a trade. I'll trade you what I've got if you give me what you got. It's a transaction, but you don't tell the truth about it. You don't say, I trade you very much. You say, I love you very much. And then the disappointment begins. Why? Because the most important thing is that you be true to oneself. You have to be true to yourself. And being true to yourself means expressing yourself in a truthful, loving way. You don't have to go up and say, you know what, I don't love you no more, get the heck out or do this and that. That's not you being the best you. I thank you. This is a important thing to me that we get this across. I think we've got one more episode, and then we'll move on. But I want us to understand relationships, and not only in the relationship, but in all relationships of life. If we start to see this a little bit clearer, we can deal with it, enjoy it more. Mr. Co-Producer.
Thank you tonight for tuning into The Messenger. And again, as we explore love, relationships, and how we interact with one another, it's important that you, as Cat Williams would say, it's important that you get in touch with your star player. Because we say it a lot, but I'm here to tell you, it's impossible to love anybody if you don't love yourself. And again, when you understand how to love yourself, and again, there is no right or wrong way, but just the fact that you are acknowledging that you do love yourself, it will allow you to express love, compassion, or whatever it is that you're feeling on a much greater level. Don't be afraid of the fact that we tell you you are godly. That's not crazy talk. That's empowering talk. So don't be afraid of the fact that we tell you God resides in you.
That's right.
You know yourself. When the Spirit of God leaves your body, you are no more. So if you understand that, don't be afraid of that, and embrace that, and understand that you have a spirit in you that is so much greater than you can ever imagine. Hey, this is co-producer. Thank you for listening to the message tonight. We'll talk to you on Sunday. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.